Okay. We will reconvene here and get started with a few housekeeping items before we get going on the actual voting. I guess my intent is to keep us moving along efficiently. I hope that we will finish up in a few hours, but if we don't, we don't. We didn't put several days of interviews this week and a couple years of process planning to rush this process. So if anyone has questions at any time in the process, where are we at, what are we doing, please ask the question and we'll try to find the appropriate answer. With that, I would like to take care of a few items, finishing up on some references and some special requests that we had for information. I might ask Paul to lead the first discussion about some additional information that he was looking for on one of the applicants.
Sally is giving each of you a recap of my discussion, and I will wait until you all have copies before proceeding.
That one.
This is information concerning Abdul Amari, who we interviewed on Monday afternoon, January 8th. In the conflict of interest section that there was a legal matter on his record, and George Sundstrom appropriately asked him for more information about that situation. Abdul explained it, but probably at what I would characterize a fairly high level, and we felt that knowing more about the situation would be appropriate in our deliberations regarding the possibility of him being forward to the legislature. So what you have in front of you is a recap of the conversation that I had with Abdul Omari this morning. I am going to make the assumption that all of you are fully capable of reading what you have in front of me, and so I hope you will give me license not to read it.
Thank you, Paul.
Number one. So number two, are there any additional questions that come to your mind as you're looking at this that I might be able to address? Yes, Sonia.
I don't know if you can, but maybe it's for all of us. I wonder if indeed we recommend him, and if indeed he becomes a regent, what kind of information would be available or should be? Maybe that's not our decision, but I think this is private information for us. But what goes forward? And what should go forward?
There may be some question about if this is public or private, and I would lean towards the idea that this is public since it's part of a court record. Unless this is a juvenile record.
It is not.
No.
Didn't think so.
So it's still, if when there are press releases later, however this could potentially become public, it might be useful for there to be a couple sentence description so that we affect how this is carried rather than a long story.
Sure. Jennifer.
Yeah, I just have a question, and I think this was discussed yesterday, but I may have missed the exact answer. But are background checks required in this process at this level?
We have not done that in the past.
Okay. And then at the next level with the legislature, they could consider that, or that is, it's also not in statute?
I don't believe it's in statute at all. We're doing a very good job sticking to the task at hand. Congratulations. This is good.
Yeah, so perhaps, I mean, maybe I'm not a lawyer. I have my Humphrey degree, public policy. But I think that the candidate was forthcoming in explaining something that perhaps in his leadership, his mentorship, I mean, the kind of people who have advised him are of such high caliber at a national, even global level, that this is perhaps something that was advised to a young man about explaining. However, we have other criteria that we're looking at to define leadership for this kind of position. And so I would really look at this kind of as a learning lesson for somebody who, as an applicant, has been advised perhaps to explain something, but it's not a part of our process. No. I would not consider it as a highly part of our deliberation.
I do want to keep this part of the discussion, George, and I'll recognize you in a minute. I do want to keep this part of the discussion to, do you have questions about what Paul presented? And any comments for in support or against the candidate?
I guess my comment, maybe just to clarify, is more about procedural.
Okay,
so
thank
still
you.
At that
yeah,
level.
We're starting to get down a slippery
yeah.
path here. George?
No, I was going to procedural too, same thing.
Okay. So any more questions about the information that Paul, and as we get into talking about specific candidates before we vote, we can say what we think about it. Okay, great. We also have some additional reference checks that were requested, and some of them were there's some in places some additional information as well that was given to us that wasn't requested. So, Jennifer, did you have?
Yeah, there was another reference for Jessica Hasen, and you all have that in front of you. I've kind of skimmed it. This is somebody who is. Should I go into it? Or?
I think we should. The additional reference, yes.
Okay.
I think we should.
Sure. I mean, I've skimmed it as well. I got this at 10:30 last night, but I gave this morning as a deadline. I will note that the other reference that was listed did not respond. There was an initial email saying that she would answer the questions, and then nothing came through. But this reference is definitely associated with the applicant through the Longfellow Community Council and a supervisor. So very similar to the other references in terms of Jessica being somebody who works very well with others and really engages people. Similar to the other references, not as much around, large-scale financial experiences. Certainly that's not part of the resume. And again, at a different level of a community organizing, local level with neighbors and very similar to the other references. So.
Did this reference, just to maybe be redundant, Jennifer, did this reference provide any insight into any concerns?
No,
yes,
there was nothing listed for weakness.
Or as well.
I mean, just enthusiastic push towards her as a regent.
Thank you. Any questions for Jennifer? And I don't want to push too quickly. Okay. If we don't have any more questions for Jennifer, David has collected additional information on Courtney, additional references on Courtney West.
Yes,
as have I.
Okay.
As chair. Courtney West, it was requested that we receive additional information concerning her current work experience and references. And so Courtney has provided two names and then another name of an individual that I reached out to. And unfortunately, since I just got them this morning, I haven't read them, so I'm just in the same boat you are. But I'll start with Ms. Maggie Thomas, which I think is at the top of your packet just handed out. She is a career coach at the Carlson's Graduate Business Career Center and is working with Courtney. Courtney has the task there of developing a program preparing less experienced MBAs for the job search. If you may recall, or maybe you don't, but Carlson School generally likes to bring people into their programs that already have work experience. So I'm anticipating that this means MBA candidates at Carlson that have less work experience than others prior to their enrollment. As the email indicates, she says that Courtney has shown insight. Again, as she has at the law school as well, she came up with this need and project on her own, and she is fearless in reaching out to students and alumni to learn more about the best practices for these less experienced MBAs looking for jobs, how they might go about doing that. So the summary is basically that she's quick with her updates and responses to email and has truly been a pleasure to work with. And that's Maggie Thomas. Jennifer Furman is an individual whose name was not given to me, or at least the email was not given to me. I found her. She is the Associate Director for Admissions and Recruiting for the Carlson MBA programs. I haven't read this email thoroughly, but I'll pick out words. She's impressed with Courtney's level of professionalism. Working with prospective students, this is now admissions. The previous one was exiting students. Now she's working with admitted students. And she makes herself consistently available to the team. She has an enthusiasm and passion in building the Carlson brand. You need to be doing that for law school. And helping others work towards their MBA futures. She's taken on the initiative with a group of her classmates are forming a small committee focused on understanding and researching the gender disparity currently in the MBA programs nationwide. And as she indicated in her interview, I think she indicated there were probably fewer women there than she thought were appropriate, or even people with other backgrounds. And so I suspect that, she's taken on that initiative to do the research behind that. And it is an interest in women, MBAs, and the like. So the summary of this is that she has the referral has no doubt she would be committed to her time and experience as a student regent to serve with integrity. The third is a colleague whose name was given to me by Ms. West, and Brandon Cox, who I understand is a colleague of hers at, again, the Carlson School. They served on a core team together. I think as Courtney indicated earlier, they go through courses together for extended periods of time, so they get to know each other quite well. And this individual highly recommends her for the student regent position. She's a confident leader, effectively delegates to meet aggressive project deadlines. She produces very high academic work products and would often revise other members' work to her higher standards. And that is the end of that report.
David, one first reaction. I'm just looking at the timeline that this all happened in.
Yes.
While people actually opened their emails and took the time to write back. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yes.
That maybe is more important than what they wrote.
Amazingly responsive. And then in addition, as Sally has passed out, Courtney also, there's a third or fourth piece of paper. One is the email to me, which you can read, but more importantly, Courtney has provided her academic resume on the back of that page. It's a two-page document. The reason for that is her effort to address the question of why don't you have more board experience listed, and I think what her attempt here is to show you that she's been engaged. Okay. So she's had her time filled, and these are the evidence of what she has done with her career to date.
Pat, Margaret? I think the research I did reflects more on when I provide my evaluation to you, and I'd like to include it at that time. I sent emails last night to undergraduate and graduate career services at the Carlson School of Management.
Okay. That's fine. We'll look forward to those comments. Are there any questions for David on the additional reference reports for Courtney West. Thank you for scrambling. I don't know if that's the right word. Supplementing. Sure.
I'm sorry, I didn't get your question then. I thought we were going to hand them out.
You want to hand them out?
Sure. Okay. Well, it's up to the chair where you want to go.
No, go ahead and hand them out. Those are additional references on
Kennedy.
Okay. Yep. I was assuming that what it was. So any more reference discussion on Courtney? Okay. David has another one as well, additional information that Sally is now passing out.
I haven't read it. I need it.
Sorry. I guess
you. This is all kind of scrambling. Mr. Kennedy believes he's addressing, again, some issues that were raised yesterday, and he felt conscientious enough to submit another reference, Nancy Carpenter. I have not talked with her, but she has sent me this. So I'm now looking at it as you are. She served with him on the Presidential Search Advisory Committee. She heartily endorses his participation in the regent selection process based on her observations. 100% devoted to the task. I assume she's meaning the presidential search. Serious of purpose was no less than any other member of the committee. In fact, she would suggest that he set the standard. Unfortunately, I don't know Nancy Carpenter. She apparently is with the Morris campus. But she indicates that he was well prepared, well versed, and she, of course, italicizes some of those words. I did not shy from asking tough questions, getting involved. He did so with poise, respect, maturity, and open and fair-minded interpreter of evidence, conscientious, earnest, fair, and devoted to the U, again with italics. And she believes he would be an excellent source choice. I think Ryan was concerned because there was a question raised yesterday about, Paul, you had addressed some issues with him concerning the presidential search experience, so this is his response.
Any questions? Does anyone else have any additional reference information on any candidates that was either submitted or requested? Or?
I do. Okay. I call the Carl's or CLA, School of Journalism and Mass Communication, to check on Al because he had served on the alumni board for 6 years. And
sorry, to check on
Alan.
Oh,
yeah, and because he did not recognize me, although that is an affiliate of the Alumni Association, and I didn't recognize him. So I called the staff, and I got an email through the night. They said he is dedicated, well-intentioned, but I think serving as a regent would be a stretch. He doesn't seem to have the skill set or depth of experience at the executive level to match the current board members, and this is from somebody at the university who staffed the committee that he was on.
Sure. I would just like to hope that the council wouldn't hold against Arturo Tushu the thinness of my report. Everybody else did wonderful jobs and reflected all of the comments. I chose because they were all so strong to let the one speak for all of them. But I want to compliment all the rest of you who did wonderful, detailed, extensive background checks, which are very helpful. But please don't hold against Arturo my my lack of recording all the wonderful comments. So thank you. I'll do better next time, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other reference? I guess reports I'm asking for at this time. Okay. David?
I do have a request. Well, I do have a request to get somebody a telephone call. So I'll just leave that on the table. If I get a break, I will do that, and I might come back with additional information at that point.
Okay.
It's always kind of last.
It is. It always happens. I'm actually checking my emails to make sure that I'm not missing anything that's in my inbox that came overnight. I don't remember anything, but that's not good to proceed on that. So why don't we go through a couple more procedural things? We may take a quick break for David to make his phone call and for me to check my emails and for anyone else to check their emails as we finish up the rest of the procedural questions. So, and then the intention is when we get back from that next short break, which I'm hoping will be a few minutes long, we'll start candidate discussions seat by seat and move into the voting. So one of the questions that is that we will be talking about, and I would actually like to, I would suggest maybe we, well, we could do it either way. We could either make the decision now or later, is regarding the ballots. And our first ballot will be for student regent position. And we will select, we are required to advance two, and we can advance up to four for the student position. As we go through that process, and we will have candidates from the pool who aren't selected, do all student applicants, which we've checked, and they also all live in the fifth, whether they check the box on the application or not, should they be considered for the fifth district position? We could make the decision now. I would suggest we can wait and make that decision after we get through the student regent position. But Sally has ballots prepared both ways. So we're not going to save any trees by making a decision one way or another, if that influences. Joanne?
But does that also include further consideration for at-large?
Then we will make the decision when we get to the at-large question as well. So I guess the issue is on the application whether they checked that if they would want to be considered for something besides the student position. And we've handled it kind of both ways in the past. There's not a definite tradition, I don't believe.
So the net of this would be that each candidate would have as much opportunity as possible to be considered.
Some candidates could have multiple opportunities. Yes. Jerry?
Little comments. I'm not sure this is the right time. You want to do this later. But
I'll tell you if it's
specifically
not.
Related to the issue with the
students. And my consideration would be if we have someone who we vote not to be a candidate, be eligible as we want to forward as a student, I would think that in my thinking, that further should eliminate them from an at-large or fifth district, whatever ones there are as well. Because their first priority is that if we say, okay, I would do this, but I don't want to have that many candidates, that might be a different question. But especially if they do not get enough support for that, they shouldn't start over from scratch on the next spot. That's a personal bias.
And I think what we will do is we will resume this conversation as we finish up the voting for the student applicants. We'll see where the chips fall and who we select. Thank you. The next issue I'd like to bring up is on voting procedures.
Good idea.
So, and I keep putting this document, and Sally's laughing at me now, with me now, yeah.
I have an extra.
Thank you. Except you don't have the one I've marked up.
Why are we not surprised?
I keep putting this document in a special place so I won't lose it, and I've lost it half a dozen times this morning. So.
It's a guarantee.
Yeah.
Break
purple.
Record show, I do not have it.
Okay. Anyway. It might be. I can do this from memory, and there's enough around me who will help me remember. Okay, here it is. Thank you, Paul, for trying to help me out. So the document that I was looking for is labeled selection procedures, and this is a bit of the magic of the council. At each of the cycles that I've been through, we interview for days, and all of a sudden, in a couple hours, we somehow merge a whole bunch of different opinions, and we end up with recommendations. So there's a little bit of magic involved here. Spelled out with. As we read through it, which I'm not going to do, but I do want to highlight a few things. At the bottom of the first page, under the Roman numeral 2, letter A, number 1, it is stated under general rules that no candidate shall be advanced without receiving support of the majority of the total council membership.
Which is now, what is that?
So our council membership is 22.
So the majority is 12.
Yep. The other thing I should have maybe said at the outset, these are the rules that we are voting by. And we can, as a group, we can suspend these rules with a two-thirds majority of the members present. Mm-hmm. As I did my math, two-thirds majority of the 16 would be something greater than 10.6, so I'll defer to 11. That's just a point of reference, that we need a majority of total council membership to advance someone. Then as I flip the page over under, still under letter A, number 2, and this was alluded to, the total number prescribed, full council membership is 22, since we have two vacancies. So these are the assumptions that we're making. As we move on under letter B, number 1, with the small b, if a candidate or candidates receive 16 or more votes or two-thirds of the council membership, two-thirds of the council membership, I believe, is 15.
Yes.
So under the and this is in a section relating to the student regent and the 5th district position. If any candidate on the first ballot receives 15 votes, they are approved. 15 out of 16 is nearly unanimous, but not quite. As we move further down here, if no candidate receives 15 or more votes, there is no selection, and we will vote another ballot. We'll be required to vote another ballot. And then there's also a change. Actually, there wouldn't be a change in letter D. Under that same subsequent balloting headline, with each successive ballot, the first ballot is 15, the next ballot would be 14. That they would need, someone would need to get 14 votes to automatically or to be selected. 13, and this is just, these are just math housekeeping things.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Someone has to be play a lawyer on this. Okay, but if you read it as a strict constructionist, Part D would say that the number of votes required for selection on a second ballot would decline each ballot to 15. So actually what it says is that we vote two-thirds the first ballot, we need 15.
Correct.
The second ballot would still be 15.
Because
it says 15, all it uses the word decline. So I think what I'm reflecting is that some of these procedures need a little brushing up, but technically speaking, the second ballot would be 15 and then just start
the
dropping 14 and 13.
Thank you. And that's an accurate point. And I'm going to jump fast forward here a little bit on the thought process. We met earlier and we thought, well, should we change these rules? And we could change them to reflect any number of things. maybe to me the most obvious was a change maybe reflecting two-thirds of actual membership here rather than membership of the council who aren't here. It's the recommendation of the exec committee that we don't change the rules, that we take our first ballot, we see where
the
voting comes out. And certainly after that, we might make a recommendation or we'll be open to discussion. So I just want to make it clear what we need to have as far as so the standard on the first ballot as a practical matter because of the number of members here will be very high. So the voting for the at-large seats, there is no two-thirds provision. The language is not the same. So as I understand it, under letter C, number 1B, candidates need to have 16. It doesn't allow for the two-thirds. So the standard for the at-large is even a little bit higher, or the threshold. In the past, balloting has usually taken voting has usually taken multiple ballots. I don't remember that there's ever been a seat filled with a single ballot, although maybe there was. Usually there are multiple ballots involved for any of the seat selections. But that doesn't mean we could make history today. So, okay, as we go through the voting process, it is my intention that you remember today as the chairman was redundant and he was maybe even boring about how many times we review these procedures, because I want everyone to be clear, partly because I want to make sure that I'm clear about what we're doing and how the voting works. So if at any time anyone's got any questions, including now. Joanne.
Mr. Chairman, under the at-large seats, this is also where we have the two incumbents. This is also where we have then the highest level of standard for voting. Is there anything that says we cannot take that up first versus last process?
I don't know if there's any reason what we couldn't, but from the idea of the most number of applicants are available for the at-large seat, and so that would include students, that would include 5th District people, that we need to eliminate the other seats first, because there's some people who are available that, for instance, if we voted for the at-large seat and we selected someone who was also eligible for the 5th District, in the past that's not how we've done it. We've used the at-large seats as a collection or a final place for as many applicants as possible to be considered for. But I don't believe there is any procedure or any rule that says we have to do it that way. That's just the suggested way.
David? And Mr. Chair, I believe any of these are subject to a motion or consideration of the body of how we proceed going forward.
Yep.
With the exception of amending, as I understand, Mr. Chair, amending the printed voting procedure would require a suspension of rules and then an amendment.
It would. It would require. Is
would
that?
Require, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Would require.
Yep.
Any more comments? Okay. David, can I look at the agenda that's underneath here?
Needs an assistant.
We all do.
We all do, yes. Okay, so this is the voting procedure. This is, okay, I think we're good. I think we've got them covered. I don't have any other procedural things. Sally, Harriet, okay. George?
On procedure, Mr. Chairman, members, one of the criteria in recommending on applicants is that we identify the needs of the Board of Regents. Specifically, do we know what the needs right now of the makeup of the board? In the statutes, it says that we're supposed to have diversity in geography, gender, race, occupation, including business and labor experience. And other than I've talked with one regent, and he said that he knew that we needed gender diversity on the board, but specifically, do we know of any specific needs that the board needs right now?
Thank you, George, for intended or not, you reminded me of another discussion item. So, great question. I would like to ask Harriet to lead a brief discussion on some selection criteria that we could either do now as part of this procedure, and I think we might just as well.
Thank you. Excuse me. What I'd like to do is not read the selection criteria document to you, but I would like to highlight some things. You do have it in your packet. It is green, I believe. At the top, it said, actually, the copy says proposal. It was actually adopted. The green one says selection criteria. My copy that I borrowed from David says proposal. So I apologize for that. So I'll give you a second. Does everybody have it out? Okay. In the research done and thoughtful preparation of this criteria, I really think that it is important to emphasize the magnitude with which the global and international piece was mentioned, to the point where it was it changed our selection criteria somewhat in terms of really emphasizing that. So if you look at number one, that now includes nation and world. So really that international commitment to economics and innovation in the state, nation, and world. Number 10, we've expanded for practical purposes is a diversity definition to include international awareness, worldview. Number 3 on the bottom, the ability to operate in a national and global context. For the university to be positioned well globally, having that skill set on the Board of Regents is critical. And so I would just like to reinforce the fact that we heard this over and over and over again. I'm also going to state that we need to be reminded of the fact that Maureen Ramirez has been a candidate from the Latino community who will be leaving. So that will certainly change the dynamics of the board. What I have also heard is that the value of having that perspective from an open willingness to share things through the eyes of someone who is living from a cultural diversity standpoint versus speaking on behalf of others has been incredibly valuable to have that firsthand. Also heard, and Lois is going to touch this, I think, a little bit, to the need for healthcare representation, someone with that expertise. The selection criteria does not specifically talk about the healthcare piece. What I heard as we went through the conversations here repeatedly in the questions that we asked really were around the healthcare and I'm losing my train of thought here. The name that we're referring to.
The Academic Health Center.
Academic Health Center. Thank you very much. So I think that we would be remiss not to keep that in the front of our minds. It is a very, very important part of the university.
Ready?
And I think Lois has a couple of things to add.
The opportunity to speak with six regents, asking the question that you posed, George. And it took notes during those conversations. And this document that says RCAC interview questions context, it's white with all the bullets on it. I went through those notes and captured the points. So this did not go through a filter, so to speak. It was right off the notes. And as a result, there's wonderfully duplication with our selection criteria, but would like to highlight a few of these points. The first one is individuals with capacity to assess the mission-critical nature of matters before the institution, going to the disruptive environment in which higher ed is functioning, and being able to conceptualize and creatively look at that future. And the global piece came up there, and you know that goes to the next bullet of international business experience for the global reach of the university. Couple bullets down, individuals with presence, decisiveness, and with leadership experience. Couple more bullets down. These are getting pulled forward because they would get duplicated by people. Individuals who have been change agents in complex settings. Couple more bullets down, individuals who have a strong understanding of the economics of the state of Minnesota. Again, individuals that do not carry a personal or professional agenda. Capacity to remove names and look at the structure of matters before the board. What do we have before us, not who do we have before us? And this one was stated in various ways by different people. Individuals of personal strength to ask questions and do the personal homework to do so. Individuals, and then going to the tail end of the conversation that Harriet just shared, individuals with healthcare, business model, and financial analysis experience. A couple more bullets down. Individuals with skill sets that are conceptual in nature in comparison to managerial and action-based. Individuals with stamina from a physical energy perspective and to work with the process of change over time. Individuals who can take the long view with opportunistic vision and strategic assessment and then development skills to carry that assessment forward. And individuals who are self-starters with an understanding of entrepreneurial approaches, again, going to the issue of how higher ed is going to face a disruptive time. So I pulled forward voices that I heard or statements that I heard repeated, and I hope that's helpful to everyone in some background that came from some sitting regents.
I think it nails it
absolutely
on the head.
I failed to mention, too.
It was handed out to everybody.
In the same conversation that Maureen leaving the board was mentioned. Benora Hung was also mentioned. So the spirit of the intent there was very much that the perspectives that those two individuals bring as people from culturally different diversity brings a perspective to the board that can only be achieved through the direct interaction and opinions and thoughts from those who have walked in the shoes of people of color. And so from that standpoint, that's how that was intended, that there is a richness and robustness that is there because of their backgrounds and history and their, in addition to their wonderful qualifications, but that there will be loss.
Mr. Chair, I have another note that goes to that diversity question. Diversity widely defined, different points of view with different experiences, that the region is not a stepping stone but a service.
And we have one candidate who has a physical disability and an artificial limb, and I do not recall, it could be, that we have had many people who have been disabled who have served on the Board of Regents. And I think that is defining diversity at its broadest level.
Yeah, I agree, and I think we are all reaching and just not reaching, I think, appropriately.
Chris, broadening
the definition of diversity, and I would only suggest, and I heard George say it, and I listened to him, and I respect him, but he did say gender diversity, and I think we have all come to a larger division of diversity. So whether you meant to say that, George, or somebody specifically said that, my own view, and I think what's reflected here, I looked at it says a diverse group. It doesn't say a gender diverse group. And I seem to remember there's even a statement somewhere that I can't find that's a broader statement that defines diversity and does not use the word gender. Just FYI, that's my, maybe I'm wrong. It seemed to me I read that one place.
George.
Chair, if I could just reply to that a little bit, and that's something else. I just repeated what one regent told me, because I asked him, what does the board need? And he used that term, gender diversity. Yeah. But the other thing I have is that the statutes look at labor background as being somebody on the board. And in the criteria that we read and whatever, there's section or comment, bullet point or whatever, I think that refers to labor, and the statutes specifically say that labor, including business and labor experience. Maybe there's somebody that's on the board. I'm not going to belittle the thing. I just bring it to the point. Maybe that's something that we should look at in the future on that. But it's in the specifically stated in the statutes, and I think that's what the legislature meant.
I think that when we look at the term labor experience, that can mean many different things. Whether it is an attorney that has experience in labor negotiations, or whether it is someone that is a leader in a union environment, an HR person maybe that has done non-union negotiations. So I think it's the experience piece that is important. And we heard this repeatedly from existing regents over time, that it is not so much the occupation that one comes from or the philosophy, be it labor or finance or medical, as much as the ability to see the big picture and to be able to thoughtfully and carefully think through the matters at hand. So I would just add that as thought. And I don't know that I've stated that very well, but I think that I hope that you get the essence of what I'm trying to say, which is that, thanks, Margaret.
Well, I was very impressed with the number of our candidates who have dealt managing very well with labor issues, union people. I mean, that's what we're looking for, because this is not about an occupational seat.
Right.
We are looking for people who have the experience. We're looking for experience, competency, maturity, and communication skills first. And then you look at the skills they bring. But this is not a Trump suit, be it international, business, labor. You don't Trump first and then ask about competency.
Absolutely. You said that very well. This is about the future of the university and who can serve in the capacity to support the president in executing the vision for the future.
Sally, just a point of clarification, and just to make sure I understand George's comment. George referred to in the statute there's something.
That's for you.
George has done his homework.
Good.
Thanks, George.
Thank you.
Council, it's the duties, subsection 3 statute. 137.0245, subsection 3, duties.
Oh, of course. Remember that one. Dan, you're looking that up right now, aren't you?
Right now.
Let's
see.
Good old 137.
Criteria that represents diversity in geography, gender, race, occupation, including business and labor and experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's what we're talking about right here.
Yep.
And we have multiple candidates that qualify under those criteria.
I guess I was just remembering that at some point in this process in the years that I've been on the council, which is now making me elder, I actually had hair when I started this process. one of the things that in my introduction to this process is that there were certain industries that had a, quote, seat at the table. That has not necessarily been fulfilled, particularly in the last 2 years. And there's some question whether that practice needs to continue or how it continues. So I wanted to clarify. Thank you, George and Sally, for pointing out the statute and what it says.
So. Okay. Are we ready?
I think we're... Are there any more questions, and I'm going to say regarding criteria, procedures? We'll take a quick, I'm going to say, how about 11:30? We start again, check emails, make a phone call if you need to, and then we will begin individual candidate discussion.